Freedom is not enough.
It's been 45 years since LBJ signed the Civil Rights Act, but even now, do we know its limits?
Freedom is not enough. You do not wipe away the scars of centuries by saying now, you are free to go where you want and do as you desire and choose the leaders you please.
But if freedom is not enough, what will it take? Minority groups are flexing their voting muscles. Minority groups are flexing their voting muscles to get some movement in the healthcare debate.
The rage is relentless. We need a movement with the quickness. You are the witness of change at the counteract. We gotta take the power back.
It's hard to get as excited about healthcare as we do about freedom, but we'll try on The Takeaway.
All across America, this is The Takeaway with John Hockenberry and Celeste Headlee from WNYC and PRI.
Good morning. It's Thursday, October 8th. I'm Celeste Headlee, here with John Hockenberry.
Good morning, Celeste. So this hour, we're also going to explore one of the most popular subjects for amateur investigators, genealogy. The New York Times, it turns out, is shaking up Michelle Obama's family tree. And liberation theology for electrical devices. Power without wires. It's the holy grail of high tech.
But first, Kathleen Hall Jamison is director of the Annenberg Public Policy Center at the University of Pennsylvania. Civil rights groups are now trying to convince Americans that affordable health care is a human and civil right. So, Kathleen, is this new push going to be enough to sway the debate on healthcare?
No, those who already are disposed to believe it have accepted the need for reform. Those who aren't going to be persuaded by that assertion.
Okay, Kathleen Hall Jamison, wow. Stay with us. We'll talk about that more
She's
in a minute.
Tough.
Right now, everything else you need to know this morning.
In the headlines, Celeste, speaking of that healthcare debate, the Congressional Budget Office is out with the latest cost breakdown of the Senate Finance Committee's healthcare bill. It clears a path for a vote, possibly as early as tomorrow. In Afghanistan, at least a dozen are dead after a car bomb exploded early this morning in Kabul. The blast took place in a busy area outside the Indian embassy.
Our partner, the New York Times, reports the president's national security team is working to reframe the war in Afghanistan. Some key advisors want to emphasize the campaign against al-Qaeda in neighboring Pakistan. This news follows a high-level strategy meeting yesterday. Back in the U.S., the Times also reports that areas hard hit by the H1N1 or swine flu virus last spring are not seeing a large resurgence. That's some good news. Some new economic data will be out later this morning. We're going to learn the number of people who filed for unemployment benefits. And a new report says long airline delays are twice as common as last decade. The Brookings Institution study says most of the problem is heavy concentrations of short trips between big cities. Among the suggestions to fix it, adding high-speed rail between major cities. Well, Wall Street gained. It was basically flat yesterday, though. Didn't move too much. The Dow opens today at 97.26. The S&P starts trading at 10.58, and the NASDAQ will open up at 21.10. All this week, we've been marking the eighth year of America's battle in Afghanistan, and we're asking you to send us your personal stories about how the war has affected your life. Have you seen any change? Has your mind been changed since the war began 8 years ago?
Sense of the mission.
Year.
I mean, do you know what the mission is in Afghanistan?
That's a really good question.
The United Nations is trying to clarify that today.
If some of you have the answer to that, let us know at 8778-MY-TAKE or send us an email to mytake@thetakeaway.org. Maybe we can forward those emails on to
the United
Barack
Nations.
Obama.
Yeah.
There you go.
The Takeaway is made possible by Liberty Mutual's Responsibility Project, encouraging discussion about what it means to do the right thing. ResponsibilityProject.com.
Good morning, everyone. Good morning, Celeste. You played that Lyndon Johnson cut there at the top and talked to
right.
Kathleen Hall Jamison right there. You know, it's amazing to me how remote the discussion of civil rights is in America from the perspective of today. It was so with us in 1965. It seems so remote in the healthcare debate right now.
Yeah, well, it is remote from the healthcare debate, and the fact that we're many of us are just now beginning to discuss whether or not healthcare is a civil right is probably surprising to a lot of people. But that's exactly what's happening. I mean, all summer we've heard angry voices at these town halls. We've heard irritated legislators responding. We even heard Senator Rockefeller break down into tears over the public option. But what we have not heard, as you said, is minority groups, and that's pretty surprising considering the gigantic disparity in healthcare coverage between white rights and minorities. So now these groups are coming forward. They're trying to make their voices heard in the debate.
And the question is it a Brown versus Board of Education kind of an issue, kind of a disparity?
Well, if it is, that would definitely motivate people,
indeed,
wouldn't it?
Indeed.
Joining us now is Hillary Shelton, the NAACP's Senior Vice President for Advocacy and Policy and Director of its Washington Bureau. We're also joined by Jennifer Nondo, Deputy Director of Health Policy at the National Council of La Raza. Good morning to you both.
Good morning.
So one of the things that I at least was reading about this healthcare debate was that people were trying to steer it away from the issue of race. The president of La Raza's National Council said we should be able to win this fight on the merits of the case and the facts themselves, and we should keep race out of it. So why is that changing now, Hillary?
It's not that it's changing. It's always been the case that we have to look at how the health care dilemma in our country affects so many different communities. We are a nation of many different communities, of races, ethnicities, and other differences. And as such, we have to make sure that any health care approach fits those various communities. One size does not fit all. We want to make sure everyone is covered as we move in this direction.
So let's first establish, for those who maybe aren't aware of there's decades of research behind this particular issue, but let's talk about some of these statistics that really lay this out in very clear terms. I mean, some of these things are very stark. I was reading that breast cancer occurs more often in white women than in black women in the U.S., but it kills more black women than white. Black hospital patients are far less likely to survive heart attacks than white patients. And the large majority of black patients that went to hospitals had the poorest survival rate for cardiac arrest. Black and Hispanic preschoolers less likely to receive asthma medications than white kids. Minority residents of nursing homes in the same nursing home less likely to get glasses or hearing aids. And minority women wait twice as long as white women for follow-up tests after an abdominal mammogram. Those things seem just startling. Is this removed from the poverty? I mean, I know that a lot of these things are confused by low income, but is there a disparity in healthcare just based on race when you take poverty out of it?
Well, it's very difficult to take poverty out of it. The reality is that African Americans are disproportionately poor, and so are Hispanics in our country. The reality is that in addition to all the examples you just gave, if you get to that point, we still have African American children, Hispanic children dying at childbirth at a rate that's much higher than white American children these days. So indeed, the disparities are there at that level. But the debate right now is also over the issue of whether there'll be health care coverage indeed. So you're talking about the actual providing of health care services, and clearly that disparity is there. But very well, if we look at who's actually covered with health care insurance, we know that we have over 46 million Americans that have no health care insurance. And we know that disproportionately African Americans and Hispanics are uninsured. So indeed, as we move in this direction, you're absolutely right. The disparity is there. The racial disparity is clearly there. And we have to make sure that we have health care in America that covers everyone.
So Jennifer Nondo, you're with the National Council of La Raza. Why has it taken so long for your groups to get mobilized? I mean, the public option in the Senate Finance Committee died by 2 votes. Where were you when the public option needed you?
Actually, what I'll say about that is that our communities have been out there loud and strong across the summer. And over the summer, we've been activating communities to collect postcards. There's been hundreds of group stories pouring into our doors. Even just in the past few weeks, as the Senate Finance Committee was being heard, we've had 5,000 calls go in a collaborative with our partners. But when there's a voice that's speaking in a positive tone about advancing the process and integrating good things, there hasn't been as much coverage on those issues. And so what we'd say is while we've taken a very civil tone in this debate, the louder, less civil voices have been more apparent in the media coverage.
Okay, Kathleen Hall-James, you're the director of Annenberg Public Policy Center at the University of Pennsylvania. Listen to this cut.
We have been waiting for health reform since the days of Teddy Roosevelt. We've been waiting since the days of Harry Truman. We've been waiting since Johnson and Nixon and Clinton. We cannot wait any longer. There comes a time when the cup of endurance runs over. There comes a time to remember the fierce urgency of right now.
So that's President Obama speaking to the Congressional Black Caucus, channeling a little bit of MLK. Kathleen Hall Jamieson, can we succeed? Can anyone succeed at turning this into a civil rights argument that health care is a civil right?
You can certainly make the argument that disparities are based on forms of discrimination that mean that some segments of society, and those can be race tied, are essentially disenfranchised, not given access. But to translate that into a language of rights at this point of the debate is extraordinarily difficult. And you notice that in the clip from President Obama. He's talking about health reform as the right in that implicit statement. Reform isn't the right. If there's a right, it's access to affordable health care. He doesn't even have that rhetoric
right
down to argue for right. That's a problem underlying the debate. If you don't feel a sense of moral outrage when you hear the rhetoric, you don't go to right.
Well, Kathleen, this is the puzzle to me, it seems. Americans have deliberately, or the public discourse has deliberately stepped back from rights questions. We talk about market mechanisms in health care. I remember when the debate over the Americans with Disabilities Act happened, it was all about money and market. It was not about rights. Why has America's public forum stepped away from civil rights questions when the 14th Amendment, for heaven's sakes, is in the Constitution?
One of the problems in this debate is the presumption that non-citizens should not be covered all but eliminates discussion of rights.
Wow.
If it's a right, it's fundamental. Humans are entitled, and something very problematic occurs when the right is denied. So you start out by saying, and virtually everybody on the public stage is saying that some people who are human and are here are not entitled. You can't then assert it as a right.
So, Jennifer Nandu with the National Council of La Raza, we spoke with a few other people in this debate. They were saying that for minorities, the public option is the only way to solve the racial disparities. Do you agree with that?
Well, we have said and come together as organizations and said that the public option is critically important. We think it's an important cost containment measure. But there are other elements that we need to address to ensure that equity is carried across the space of healthcare reform. That means that we need a culturally and linguistically appropriate system that takes steps, tangible steps, to eliminate healthcare disparities, discrimination, and improve health access and quality in our system.
So, Hillary Shelton with the NAACP, your group has started this campaign called 880, and you're talking about the deaths of 880,000 people of color that could have been prevented if they had passed some kind of health care reform in the last decade. And I would imagine that for many people that would be very motivating, but polls also show that for non-minorities, for whites, the healthcare debate, that kind of thing doesn't reach them, that they're not as invested in healthcare as say the minority communities are. So how do you move these groups that aren't motivated by that kind of argument?
Well, very well, if you also look at the issue of minorities, when you talk about minority health at the federal level, you're talking about also white ethnic groups, too, those who live in Appalachia, that work in coal mines and others. I think that very well we have to do a better job of making sure we recognize how this affects the various communities throughout our society. When people see that this very well affects us as well, we talk about health care providing more hospital beds in given areas, our rural areas, and many of our inner city areas, as we've seen many of our public hospitals close, and the need for additional health care along those lines. I think people will begin to see how this will affect each and every one of us in our country, those of us who have health care insurance, because don't forget, this health care debate is not just about making sure that those who are uninsured become insured. It's also about making sure that those who have insurance have adequate insurance, and that very well their doctors have the opportunity to make the final decision instead of the insurance companies.
Okay, that was Hillary Shelton and the NAACP Senior Vice President for Advocacy and Policy, Director of its Washington Bureau. We also spoke with Jennifer Nandu, Deputy Director of Health Policy at the National Council of La Raza. And thanks to Kathleen Hall Jamieson, Director of the Annenberg Public Policy Center at the University of Pennsylvania. Weigh in on this issue at 877-8-MY-TAKE or mytake@thetakeaway.org.
That was really interesting.
You can email us at mytake@thetakeaway.org or call us toll-free at 877-8-MYTAKE.
869-8253.